This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, affordable housing in Liberty. The green building at the corner of Chestnut and Main Streets in Liberty, long in disrepair, is going to see new life thanks to a New York State Restore Rehabilitation Grant with room for 39 affordable housing units. Manor Inc.'s Aiden Dusenberry-Dalto joins us with more. Science stories with Joe Johnson, including a stellar explosion, the heat dome that's been heating up the western United States, and how tiger beetles might be mimicking the sounds of poisonous bugs so bats will avoid eating them. Plus, a short film festival in Parksville, very short. Films can't be more than 2 minutes long. Maggie Fitzpatrick with Moving Toward Health, and Mrs. Kasha Davis to preview the fabulous weekend of Drag Me to the Catskills this weekend. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Israeli forces have killed four Hamas militants in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, where violence has increased since the start of the Gaza War. And four Israeli soldiers were killed in Gaza, as NPR's Daniel Estrin reports from Tel Aviv.
In Gaza, the Israeli military said four soldiers were killed and others wounded inside a building booby-trapped by Hamas that collapsed. In the West Bank, the Israeli military says forces were pursuing a Palestinian suspect wanted for an attack on a Jewish settlement. Hamas said one of its commanders and three other militants were killed in a clash with the Israeli forces. Hamas called on more Palestinians in the West Bank to carry out attacks against Israel. Palestinian health officials say since the Gaza War began in October, Israeli army arrest raids in the West Bank and some suspected shootings by Israeli settlers have killed more than 500 Palestinians. By comparison, in 2022, the year before the war began, only around 50 Palestinians were killed in West Bank violence, according to the UN. Daniel Estrin, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The United Nations finds more than 10 million people in Sudan have been displaced by the war there. Intense fighting between Sudan's army and the paramilitary group, the Rapid Support Forces, has left tens of thousands dead and millions on the brink of famine. It has also fueled fears of genocide, as NPR's Emmanuel Akinwotu reports.
The unprecedented scale of displacement in Sudan continues to rise. More than 10 million people, almost a quarter of the country's population, have fled Sudan or been displaced within it. The fighting has also led to a resurgence of ethnic cleansing in the troubled region of Darfur, where there was a genocide some 20 years ago. The RSF now control most of Darfur and have launched an offensive on the northern city of El Fasher, which hosts more than 1.8 million people, including refugees. Emmanuel Akinwotu, NPR News, Lagos.
There are primary elections in four states today: Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina. There is a special election in Ohio as well. It is for a congressional seat. Stocks opened lower this morning as the Federal Reserve begins a two-day policy meeting. NPR Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average tumbled about 365 points in early trading.
The central bank is expected to hold interest rates steady this week, but markets will be watching for any signal about future rate movements. Fed policymakers will release updated economic forecasts tomorrow afternoon. Also tomorrow, the Labor Department will report on what happened with inflation in May. April saw a modest slowdown in price hikes, but the Fed wants to see more progress before it starts cutting interest rates. Retail gasoline prices continue to fall. AAA reports the average price of regular gas is about 15 cents lower than this time last year. And Apple is teaming up with OpenAI to bring more artificial intelligence features to iPhones and smart speakers.
NPR's Scott Horsley. This is NPR. President Biden will address a gun rights safety conference today in Washington. He's expected to announce the Justice Department has charged more than 500 defendants for violating a new federal law. It bans gun trafficking and the straw purchases of guns. Some of the attendees at the Every Town for Gun Safety Conference are groups such as Moms Demand Action. Some groups were formed in the wake of mass shootings. About 1 in 10 adult U.S. citizens cannot easily show a document that proves their citizenship. That's according to newly released results from a national survey. As NPR's Hansi Lo Wang reports, the findings are raising concerns about proposal to require citizenship documents when people register to vote in federal elections.
Federal law currently requires states to accept registration forms with applicants' sworn statements about their U.S. citizenship. And most states use applicants' driver's license or Social Security numbers to check government databases. Still, Speaker Mike Johnson and other top Republicans are pushing a House bill that would require citizenship documents during voter registration for federal elections. According to survey results from the voting rights group Vote Riders, the Brennan Center for Justice, and the University of Maryland, roughly 1 in 10 eligible voters say they do not have or could not quickly find to show the next day their U.S. birth certificate, passport, or naturalization certificate. That's more than 21 million eligible voters potentially unable to cast a federal ballot. Hansi Lo Wang, NPR News.
The National Weather Service says that dangerous heat continues today in California and the desert southwest. Weather cautions extend to southern New Mexico and western Texas. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on safe driving habits at progressive.com. Not available in California or from all agents. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joe Johnson is a retired science teacher from Port Jervis. He's also a Radio Catskill volunteer, and he brings us science stories that have caught his eye this week. Today, it's a heat dome that's been heating up the western United States you might have heard about, how tiger beetles are fooling bats into not eating them, and a stellar explosion.
We've got three stories this week, or three subjects I'd like to talk about. The first one is a real blast, and that's a really bad joke because we're talking about a recurrent nova. All right. Now, a nova is a star that suddenly gets big and bright. It's not really an explosion. It's just an expansion so that it gets bright enough so it looks like a new star. That's where the term comes from.
And now, I just want to make a distinction there because so that's a nova. That's good to point out because most often people hear about supernova, which pretty much is an explosion.
A supernova is an explosion, yes.
So this is just the regular nova, and it's really just like this expansion and brightening.
It's like inflating a balloon, and it just gets a lot bigger, and because it's bigger, it puts off a lot more light, so it looks brighter.
So then what's a recurrent nova?
So a recurrent nova is a nova that happens over and over again on a periodic basis. Now, this is a star that is in the constellation Corona Borealis that is in the northern part of our sky. And if you want to find it, I really suggest you either get yourself a really good star map or get yourself one of those phone apps like I have, and it'll home you right in on it. It's even red so that it won't mess up your night vision.
I would say it's a smallish but bright kind of U-shape if you look for like a U-shape.
Yeah, looks like a crown.
A crown, yeah.
Yeah, that's where the name comes from. Now, this star that we're talking about is about 3,000 light years away, and it's actually a binary star system. In other words, it's not just one star, it's two stars. Now, there's a white dwarf and a red giant, and they're co-orbiting each other. Now, they're about the same mass, but the red giant is thousands of times larger than the white dwarf. The white dwarf is very small, very hot, and it's got about the mass of our sun, okay? And it has, because it's so small and so dense, its gravity is extremely strong. And so what's happening is as it orbits with the red giant, it's actually pulling material, gases, off the red giant. And they're building up on the surface of the white dwarf. And over time, the heat increases, the temperature increases inside, and it triggers a thermonuclear explosion, and it blows off that accreted material and gets very, very big and bright.
Red giant and a white dwarf, those are both late-stage stars,
yes,
right?
These
are old stars.
They are old stars.
This is an interesting codependent relationship they got going. So then what does the white dwarf do with what the red giant's got?
Well, what the white dwarf does is, once again, it has tremendous gravity because it's so small. It's the thing is about the size of the Earth, but about the mass, a little bit more massive than our sun.
Wow.
So it's incredibly dense. Its gravitational field is so strong that it's literally ripping gas off the surface of the red giant, primarily hydrogen. Okay, and then hydrogen then builds up on the surface because you're getting more and more pressure inside the star because of the weight of that hydrogen. It's actually increasing the temperature inside the white dwarf, and eventually it gets hot enough to trigger a thermonuclear explosion, and it goes boom.
and it blows off all that excess mass and gas.
Blows off all that accreted material.
And we see that.
You'll be able to see that. Now, right now, you can't see that star. If you wanted to see it, you'd have to get a pretty good telescope to be able to see it. But it is going to get so large and so bright because it's blowing this material off that you're going to be able to see it with your naked eye.
And again, like we talk about something like, you know, maybe Betelgeuse will go supernova.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen soon, but soon could be 100,000 years.
Right. Or right? It could be tomorrow.
This is recurrent. This is how often does this happen?
Well, this particular recurrent nova happens about every 80 years.
Wow.
It was first observed in the year 1217. And the last two observations were 1866 and 1946, about 80 years apart. Now, it's acting just like it did in 1946 in terms of its dimming and brightening and dimming and brightening. So they think it's getting ready to blow. And the best estimate is September of this year.
Wow. Wait, you could get it down to the month. The scientists would actually suggest a month for this.
Well, I wouldn't bet the farm on it.
No, but I would learn where Corona Borealis is and start looking up and see if you notice a bright star all of a sudden one
Absolutely.
Night.
Now, this is not going to be like there and gone. It's going to be bright enough for about a week to be able to see it. So if you miss the initial, which, you know, a lot of people are going to, you're not going to see it go boom, but you'll be able to see the leftover, the brightness of that explosion.
Wow, how cool is that? Keep looking up, as Jack Horkheimer used to say.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing is 1946, we had a certain level of technology to, you know, observe stuff like this. Right now, we've got satellites in orbit that look at things in the X-ray and ultraviolet and visible, and we're going to observe this thing all across the spectrum, and we're going to learn a lot about stars when this happens.
That's great. Well, thank you for giving us that update and something to look forward to, something to look up to, literally. Next up, you've got a story about Beatles, B-E-E-T-L-E-S, yes. Not the musical group. So
not the
got?
Band, the Bugs. No. Yes. So this is from a May 15th issue of Biology Letters. There's a scientist named Harlan Goff, and he's a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And he's very interested in echolocation of bats and how insects react to that. So bats, if you should remember, use echolocation to find flying insects at night. You may have seen the really great slow-mo video of them catching the insects on the fly and with a little flap down between their lower limbs. Now, the way they do this is they emit ultrasound. And ultrasound is sound that's higher than the human hearing, you know, than we can hear. It's up to 60,000 kilohertz. And that's a pretty high-pitched sound. They listen for the sound to reflect off the prey insects, and they home in on them. Now, when they get closer and closer, they start buzzing faster and faster. They make more sound, and it's called the terminal buzz. And insects have learned to recognize that. Now, a lot of insects have ear-like structures that allow them to hear these echolocation pulses, and they have evolved these great defenses to protect them from the bats. Now, this is best studied in moths. Some moths will just fold up their wings when they hear that terminal buzz and just fall to the ground, fall out of the sky and evade the bat. Some can produce their own ultrasound and confuse the bat to make it think it's a toxic insect because their wings beat at a different speed. And some make enough ultrasound that they actually jam the echolocation of the bat. It's pretty interesting stuff.
Wow. Is this a recent discovery or is this something that people have had an idea about for some time?
People have had an idea about it for quite some time. I don't know if you've ever seen bats hunting at night, but you can actually hear them chitter.
Yeah.
And of course, scientists being scientists, they wanted to know what all that chittering was about. And they started, you know, listening with microphones and realized what was going on. So the critter that's being studied here isn't a moth, though. It's a tiger beetle. This Harlan Goff, he had a theory that they, too, used anti-bat strategies, including ultrasound or involving ultrasound. So what he did was he took tiger beetles and he attached them to a very thin rod with a dollop of wax. And he blew on them to make them think they were flying, so they would start flying. So then he would play this terminal buzz. And he would see how the tiger beetles reacted to it. And what they did is they made ultrasound. And he started wondering, well, why is this ultrasound an anti-bat technology? And so what he found was that it wasn't loud enough to jam the bats. And what it does is it sounds like a toxic moth. So the beetle has actually learned through evolution to sound like a toxic moth and evade the bats that way. So they're going to be doing experiments and see if this really works. They'll see if they can get bats to eat them in the air on the fly. They readily eat them, so they're not toxic. But this is pretty interesting stuff.
There's like so much drama and subterfuge going on in the natural world, right? Like literally outside of my front porch, watching those bats swoop around mm-hmm. on a summer evening, and this drama is playing out, and there's cloak and dagger things happening in the insect world that we don't even know about.
It's like move and counter move.
It's great.
It's almost like technology.
Yeah, it is. It's hard not to think of these things in military terms and think of like stealth planes and radar and LIDAR and things like that.
Well, it is life and death.
There you go. It is life and death. Speaking of, we are anticipating hotter than usual summer and a wetter than usual summer and a busier hurricane season than usual. At least on that front end, you've got some reporting to tell us a little bit about what to expect with heat, especially a particular type of heat, right?
Well, I specifically want to talk about the heat dome that formed in the southwestern United States last week and, in fact, is still there today.
But heat dome is something that, you know, we were hearing about them last year mm-hmm. and the year before. Mm-hmm. It seems like something I don't remember ever hearing about when I was a kid.
No, it's kind of a new phenomenon. They do happen occasionally, but they're happening more and more often. And this is where temperatures are well over 100 degrees. I think I saw 112 in Phoenix or something like that last week. And I just turned to my wife and said, no way, never moving to Phoenix.
Thank you.
Yeah. No, it's just what it sounds like. It's a giant dome of very hot, very dry air. And what happens is this is basically a giant high-pressure system. High-pressure system, upper-level high-pressure system. See, air, dry air is very heavy. It's actually heavier than wet air. And so when you get air that's very dry and very hot, it tends to push down harder, and that's why it's called a high-pressure system. The weight of the air is what creates that high pressure. Now, what's happening here is that the clear air is letting the sun in, heats the surface up. That's why it gets so hot. Now, normally an air current would come along, and it would move that hot air out of the way. But what's happening right now is that the jet stream has gone much farther to the north than it normally is. So it normally would be moving these parcels of hot air along, and right now it's not. And so it's actually becoming very stagnant air in this desert southwest of the United States, and it's getting really, really hot. Like I said, 112, 115, crazy, crazy temperatures. Now, there's a lot of emergency preparations in place. They're setting up cooling stations. They're setting up water for people. They know that this is going to be a strain on the system. And this is the earliest that anything like this has ever happened.
Is this a symptom of global warming?
Well, global warming really isn't the word that they use anymore.
Climate change.
Climate change, yeah, because it's, some places are actually getting a little colder. You add more energy to the atmosphere, and it's definitely going to change what's going on. It's going to make it hotter. It's going to move things around. I think this is why the jet stream is a little farther to the north. Normally, it's a little farther south right now and slowly migrates to the north as the temperature goes up. But now it's just all of a sudden way up over the northern United States, in southern Canada. And so the air is not being moved along. It's just sitting there getting hotter and hotter and hotter.
From the outer reaches of space and the novae to right here at home in the heat dome, I thank you so much for going over the latest in the science news with us.
Thanks. My pleasure.
That was retired science teacher Joe Johnson and Radio Catskill volunteer with some science stories, speaking to our own Jason Dole. We'll take a break, and when we come back, a grant to restore downtown Liberty. It's an article in this month's Manor Inc., and we'll hear from the student journalist who wrote about it, Aiden Dusenberry Dalto, next.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, I'm Bill Williams, host of the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction. Join me on Tuesday evening at 6 when my guest will be Marsha Lee Taylor. Marsha has 30 years of public and private sector experience in the addiction field, and she's the founder of MLT Strategies. That's the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction. Tuesday night at 6 only on the Local Edition.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Liberty's green building at the corner of Chestnut and Main Streets in downtown Liberty, New York, long in disrepair, will see new life thanks to a New York State Restore Rehabilitation Grant. Here to tell us more is Manor Inc.'s Aiden Dusenberry Dalto. Manor Inc. is the nonprofit student newspaper that enables young people to develop skills and share their voice in the community. Good morning. Good morning, Aiden.
Good morning.
So the green building, I'm glad you wrote about this. I was downtown Liberty and drove by and I saw all this activity going on. I wondered what was happening. So the green building is right there in the corner, that stoplight, a diagonal from like Town and Country Antiques across from the pizza place. It's that right, that building on the corner, a historic building. We'll talk about that. Yeah. But what's going on there?
So basically, a local developer named Abraham Mizrahi, he's the current owner of the green building. And he has multiple other properties in the Liberty area. He's worked closely with Supervisor Frank DeMeo and Confidential Secretary Nick Rusin to achieve the Restore New York grant, which specifically targets neighborhood growth.
Yeah, so they got, how much did they get with this Restore grant, and what is being done there? I mentioned some affordable housing's going in.
Yes, they got $1.25 million to restore the building.
Yeah, and so how many affordable housing units for working families will be eventually there?
There will be 39.
39 is a pretty big number and much needed in an area where affordable housing is at a premium here. So getting those units in, a really good thing. What's going on? What's the timeline looking like? Have they said, I mean, I've seen that they've gutted the building and they're working on it. It seems like it's in pretty bad disrepair.
Yeah, well, they've been working on it pretty consistently now. I'm not sure what the timeline is for it being complete.
Right, but they're on it now, and they're saying that they've got the floors need to be done. They were buckled upstairs, roof leaks, and they're planning to do 39 apartments on the upper floor and then retail down below.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about this building. It's three stories, and it's historic. It was formerly the Liberty Music Hall.
Yep.
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that as a music hall?
Yeah, so basically, it was a very historic building. The music hall was a loved piece of the town, and then it was destroyed in the devastating fire of June 1913.
Yeah, and so it's 45,000 square feet. They're going to restore a third of that space, as we've said, with some ground floor commercial real estate, and the rest is going to be renovated into apartments. When you spoke to Town of Liberty Supervisor Frank DeMeo, what was his reaction?
He was very excited about it. He thought it would be a great piece to the community, basically, and it would open up new life, and basically it brings way to like new projects now because they see that, oh, Liberty's developing, and it opens the way for like more grants and
development. There's a practical thing going on with more retail and housing, but there's also this psychological thing, seeing growth and something going on really good in right there in downtown Liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you come upon this story? Was this something you were interested in or is something that you got assigned?
I got assigned it, but it's actually a really interesting story to me because Liberty didn't really seem like it was developing too much, but now that I visited with DeMeo, it seems like it's like they have so much development going on like under the scenes, and it might be like a really nice town in like the next like 6 years.
I think that a lot of people would like to see that. A lot of people have said, oh, I wish we could get this turned around, or maybe we can do this or that. And you're seeing this in action.
There's quite a bit going on there.
Did you go, I'm not sure if you were able to go inside the building, or were you able to see at least what's going on outside the building there?
No, I didn't.
Yeah. I can see that some of the pictures you guys have, though. The demolition looks to be pretty extensive.
Yeah.
And as you drive by, I noticed also in the picture, and when I drove by too, I saw like all the windows have been taken out and they're restoring all of that. So hopefully bringing that back to its original 1904 glory with some modern amenities. So you are with Manor Inc. You're going into your sophomore year, is that right?
Yep, sophomore.
Yeah. And I asked you beforehand, do you have another story you're working on yet, or do you not sure?
I do not have a story yet.
Okay.
anything you're interested in or want to make sure you get a chance to talk about or report on?
I always love talking about sports.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's fun to me. And then I also like learning about what's going on in the town.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe the editor-in-chief is listening and she'll assign you one of those.
Yes. Give me a good story, please.
Please, Angie, do that. That's Aiden Dusenberry Dalto from Manor, Inc. It's Sullivan County's youth-driven, award-winning, community-supported newspaper. The June issue is out now with Aiden's article in there on, page 3, cover story on call waiting, more schools opting to ban cell phones. So the student journalists there are tackling all kinds of issues, and you can see that on the newsstands or online at manor-inc.org. Aiden, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. We'll take a break, and when we come back, moving toward health, Maggie Fitzpatrick looking beyond the physical to overlooked exercise benefits. You're listening to Radio Chatsko.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
I'm Maria Hinojosa, this week on Latino USA. How the war on Gaza is fostering solidarity from Latino communities and what this means for the November presidential elections.
People are making the connections to what they are experiencing, to what is happening in Gaza and Palestine.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Thursday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. Every Tuesday, we speak to Maggie Fitzpatrick from the Sullivan County Democrat, and her column, Moving Toward Health, appears in the paper every Tuesday. So we're going to talk about today's. Good morning.
Good morning.
This one, interesting. Overlooked exercise benefits. Looking past some of the things besides just like losing weight and those benefits beyond the physical. So what's behind this article for you this week?
Yeah, I think, you know, we can get really caught up in just thinking, oh, I need to exercise because I need to or want to lose weight, right? And we make that association where there's so much more to moving our bodies. There's so much more that we can get out of it. So, I just wanted to talk about some of those things.
I like what you're saying in the opening paragraph, that it's a tool meant to be used frequently for the duration of our lives, mm-hmm. and not a dreaded experience intended to punish ourselves.
I know. Like when
were you thinking of me when you wrote that?
Maybe. Maybe just like the whole year of conversations we've had so far.
So you want to reframe this belief that you have to exercise because of some negative feeling you have about yourself.
Yeah, it's easy to make that association of there's something wrong with me, so I have to do this thing, and now this thing is bad because there's something wrong with me, right? Yeah. And then we just get into this loop of negativity, and that doesn't really make us want to do it, yeah, you know? Right. Doesn't really make us want to do it. So we have to consciously think about it differently, because that loop is the easy loop for our brain to get stuck in, right? So we have to work to make it different.
Right. So we kind of know about the physical benefits, right? And you do take time to mention some of the things we should be doing every day. Can you remind us?
Yeah. So we just, I was just talking about, you know, the two major types of exercise, so cardiovascular exercise and resistance training, right? So those types of exercise are really great for us to incorporate into our routine regularly. So cardiovascular exercise, again, is, you know, for our heart, right? It keeps our heart healthy. And then resistance training is more for our muscles, right? To keep our muscles healthy and us nice and strong.
Yeah. And also as you age, something to keep in mind that, you know, we mentioned about heart health, but one thing that kind of struck me and I was thinking about was bone density. And as you age, how exercise really helps with your bone density. I mean, that is an issue, obviously, as you age.
Yeah, it really is, especially for women, but also for men, for everyone. Once you kind of get to that, I like to call it level 3, you know, age 30. level 3, things start to not improve as much. They still can, of course, right? But the natural trajectory is that at that point, things such as bone density are going to start to decrease, even if it's very slightly. So if we can do things such as resistance training, that will help us be more on the increase, right? Making it better versus just allowing the natural decrease in things such as bone density. But if we can keep working towards that, that decreases our chance of serious injuries like breaking bones, right? Yeah.
So we talk about those things, right? Those are the things we're talking about. But the article, again, focusing on other benefits that aren't as widely talked about. So let's talk about them.
Yeah. One of my favorite benefits of exercise is the ability to overcome challenges, right? So exercise is a controlled environment where we get to manipulate variables at our own will, right? So we get to decide how long we exercise for, how hard, what the challenge is, how much we're going to push ourselves, how much we're not, right? And so in this controlled environment, we are able to challenge ourselves and overcome something hard, right? Or maybe we don't overcome it and we fail. But either way, we're in a controlled environment where even the failure is not the end of the world, right? It's not that big of a deal. But what this controlled environment does is it allows us to essentially practice overcoming hard things, right? So that way, in the rest of our life, when the variables are not as controlled, we don't get to choose when we stop or how hard it is. We have practice overcoming hard things, and that builds up our resilience and our confidence for all of the other challenges that we're going
to
face.
You're creating this safe environment to fail,
yes,
right? And to be able to realize that you're overcoming something in that way. That's an interesting way to think about it. I didn't think of it that way. And you also mentioned that it's a healthy way to add adversity to your life.
Exactly. We're constantly facing adversity and we don't get to choose how it shows up,
right?
Like it's the world is going to throw things at us in all sorts of ways we could never imagine. But exercise is a way that we can choose how that adversity shows up and we can practice overcoming things that are hard, which then makes it a little bit easier for us to do it in the rest of our life.
Let's talk about micro tears. it sounds not good, but it actually is a good thing. So when we exercise, we get stronger because our muscles are having these little micro tears. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. So this is the like direct analogy that I used. But when we're doing resistance training, right, let's just take a bicep curl as an example. You have your dumbbell, right, and you curl the dumbbell and we're working on growing our biceps. When we're doing that exercise, the muscle fibers are actually slightly tearing. They're getting slightly injured as we do the exercise. And then as we recover, as we rest and eat protein and, you know, go to sleep and all that, the muscles grow back stronger, right? So we have to actually rip that muscle for it to then grow back stronger. And it's kind of the same thing in our mind, right? As we're going through exercise, when we are facing a challenge or having a failure, we're having a micro tear, essentially, right? It's not going to destroy us, but it's something that is breaking us down a little bit so then we can recover and come back stronger next time.
Oh, yeah. So facing this challenge in this controlled exercise environment allows you to build up this strength and resilience mentally and other environments where you might find this sort of thing happening.
Yeah, it's the same. Like imagine you're training for a sport, right? Or for a race or something. You're in the gym training for a race that happens outside of the gym. It's the same relationship, right? Everything you're training for in the gym mentally prepares you for all of the competitions that happen outside of the gym too.
And lastly, exercise, one of the best ways to change our mental state in the moment.
Yeah. And this is my second favorite thing about it is that our mind and our bodies are very connected, right? Research is growing on this every single day. But if we're having a struggle in our mind, right, maybe we're just feeling down that day or we're feeling really anxious or overwhelmed or something, moving our bodies gives us the opportunity to change how we're feeling in our mind, right? So the physical act of moving your body actually changes the composition of your brain, not only in that moment, but also for the rest of the day and also for days to come. So if we can move our bodies, we can actually change the way that we think and feel in our mind as well.
I think that you always bring us these different ways to look at exercise beyond the gym, beyond, you know, the physical benefits. There's this mental aspect of it. And then thinking about how it applies to just your everyday adversity, as you mentioned, we're going to always encounter something. So it's best to be prepared. And this is a good way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to want to keep your body in shape, right? Losing weight's important if that's something that you need to do. But that's not the only reason why we should exercise.
Maggie Fitzpatrick, moving us toward health every Tuesday. Every day and every Tuesday. The article is in the current issue of the Sullivan County Democrat. You can find it on newsstands today or at scdemocratonline.com. Maggie Fitzpatrick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break and back with more Radio Chatskill.
This is a randomized weekly test of WJFF's emergency alert system. This is only a test.
WJFF Radio Catskill.
The radio station in, just turn it on, you'll be gone.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Next month, the Conflicts Gallery and the Parksville Arts Center are hosting the CONPAC TSTS Film Festival. And we'll get into what TSTS stands for in just a second. From Todd Perlmutter and Marcus Brooks, who are joining us now from New Memories and also CONPAC.
The Parksville Arts Center.
And the Parksville Arts Center. Yeah. All things. So, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Tell me about what TSTS stands for.
It's too short to suck. So it's a movie festival, and it's really made it's that way so that it makes it really easy for, you know, almost anyone to make a movie and submit it to us. And that's, you know, one of the reasons that we're here is we have submission deadline is July 1st. So it's really, we're making it super open. A short movie, you can make it on your iPhone, or you can make it really classy. We're going to have on July 13th, we're going to have a red carpet award ceremony. That's why we're here in Texas today.
You look fabulous.
Thank you. We're going to have the second annual CONPAC event will be the film festival and Memmy Awards ceremony directly following the film festival. So we're going to show a bunch of submitted movies, and then we're going to have an award ceremony, give away prizes, and it'll be a red carpet event, and you could come dressed to impress, or you could wear a red carpet. So those are your choices. You could come dressed in a tux, or you could wear a red carpet.
So let's talk a little bit about the film festival and the parameters around the film festival. When you say it's too short to suck, that these are short films, you mean really short.
2 minutes or less, literally.
2 minutes,
literally 2 minutes or less, and it could be anything. I mean, it could be, you know, 30 seconds if you want, but it just can't be over 2 minutes.
Yeah, if it is over 2 minutes, you will be disqualified and you won't be, able to actually be part of the film festival. So make sure it's less than 2 minutes, and the deadline is actually July the 1st for getting these submitted, and you could submit them at.
There's two ways to submit. You could submit a downloadable link to CONPAC, which is CONPAC filmfestival@gmail.com. Or if you can't do that, you can mail in to P.O. Box 564, Parksville 12768. This information is also on the Parksville Arts Center website, which is parksvilleartscenter.com, under events, and the flyer for this, that information for submissions will be there as well.
So where did this idea come from for a two minutes or less film festival? Was it because some of the Hollywood films that are more than 2 minutes are maybe too long.
Yeah. Well, we just kind of want to get more as many people involved in it as possible. So this is the second annual event that we've done together. Last year's was basically the opening of New Memories in the Conflux Gallery. And we just wanted to have something that we could get, you know, really crowdsourced artistic entertainment in. And so that was what we talked about.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people get overwhelmed with making films and showing films, and the whole part of the gallery and in New Memories in general is to bring the community together and help celebrate artists and help celebrate visual arts and being able to all come together and experience, you know, art together and work together. And by having the 2 minutes, it's kind of like a low bar to set for people that are trying to get involved in getting their art and videos out there.
Well, it opens it up to more people, too. Like, you'll get probably a wide range of ages and people, wide range of experiences. Was that the experience you had last year?
Well, we didn't do the film festival last year. This will be the first year for the film festival. But that is the goal, to get it. We're trying to make it so that if you have a great idea, but you haven't shot a movie before, you can just do it, because the categories are going to be, you know, most creative, you know, concepts and weirdest idea and, you know, best music. So really it's if we make it really short and you just, you know, you can just run and gun, try something out and it'll be more open that way.
Have you received some entries already? And can you tell us about any of the themes so far without revealing too much?
I mean, we've already gotten more than one animated short.
Wow.
Which, the very first thing we got was a stop motion animation. I was like, wow, it's unbelievable. And we haven't actually, I think there's a lot of submissions that we haven't even gotten to yet.
Yeah. So. And there is a handful of submissions that have been from a catalog of work of things that people have already produced that fits the deadline of, or the 2 minute, time frame. But then there's also a lot of people that are making new work for this specifically. So you can fit in either one of those categories.
And you're also doing the Memmy Award Show. So that's the New Memories Memmy Award Show to highlight and award. This is like the Cannes Film Festival of Parksville.
Exactly. Yes. 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 So if you haven't, so that's on July 13th. So if you haven't been to an award ceremony before, this is your opportunity. Come dressed up, be a part of the award ceremony. And the Memmy, we're still in the middle of designing it. I think we were going to have two of the artists that do a lot of work at Conflux stand on top of each other, you know, holding a fist in the air, and then live map that into a like a statue. So I think still in progress, but it's gonna be great.
coveted, I say.
Yeah.
Let's remind people again about the deadline and where they can submit their 2 minutes or less.
July 1st short is film. The deadline, and July 13th is the event. July 1st deadline. Send to a downloadable link to CONPAC, CONPAC, filmfestival@gmail.com, or you can mail it in. And if you need this information, go to ParksvilleArtsCenter.com under events, and the information will be right there.
What else you guys got cooking in Parksville this summer?
Well, we just got a popcorn machine, so there's surely going to be some popcorn.
Perfect.
There at the event.
And then in August 17th, mark your dates, mark your calendars for the Parksville Bacock.
Always good. And hopefully we'll see you before then dressed accordingly.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Marcus Brooks and Todd Perlmutter, thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Good luck with the TSTS Too Short to Suck Film Festival.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, drag me to the Catskills. It's going to be a fabulous weekend in the Catskills. Mrs. Kasha Davis next.
Radio Catskill is partnering with StoryCorps for One Small Step, an effort to remind the country of the humanity in all of us. I'm Isabel Braverman, and we are pairing up strangers in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania to have conversations, not debates. Get to know your neighbors. Let's take one small step away from division and toward each other. Sign up at WJFFradio.org.
StoryCorps' One Small Step and the radio station hubs are made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from The Furniture Restore, located on Main Street in Jeffersonville, specializing in antique and vintage furniture, rugs, art, and lighting.
because buying well-made and pre-owned is a better choice for the planet. Online at therestorejville.com. And from The River Reporter, the community newspaper serving four counties along the Delaware River in Pennsylvania and New York. RiverReporter.com. And from listeners like you.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Sullivan Catskills are about to get a whole lot more fabulous this weekend. Drag Me to the Catskills is a weekend-long pride celebration featuring drag queens, performances, and more. And it includes our next guest, Mrs. Kasha Davis, the ultimate, as she calls herself, workhorse queen. Good morning.
That's right. Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I'm a delight in most circles, is what they say, I think, you know.
Now,
I have to tell you, workhorse queen, I was on the news already here in Rochester, New York this morning, so I'm just excited to be with you.
You're already prepped and ready to go, giving the media tour for us. Now, I mentioned you call yourself the workhorse queen, but at Drag Me to the Catskills this weekend, you really are working hard. You're at almost, I think, every event. Is that right?
Just about. I mean, I am the CEO, the chief entertainment officer of Drag Me to the Stage. So, you know, I like to keep my finger on the pulse, as it were, and be a part of all of the festivities. It's such an amazing weekend, though.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the things that are going on. I mentioned that we're going to have a lot of drag queens folks might know from RuPaul's Drag Race, including yourself. But we're starting off on the event on Friday the 14th. There is what's going on in the first night of things? It's a
well, yes, the first night is my one-woman show. And I say one woman. First of all, I am a lady, as I mentioned. And I have Mr. Davis, my husband now of 21 years. He is on orchestra, otherwise known as the laptop. And I will be singing songs and telling stories about my life, about my acceptance of self, my coming out story, and my journey to sobriety. So it's a very special show that's near and dear to my heart. And we're kicking the weekend off with that one-woman show at the Forestburg Playhouse.
Yeah, and then you're going to be the next day, the 15th. There's a couple of things going on. First, an event, the Story Hour at Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. So it's Drag Queen Story Hour.
That's right. Well, drag is not a crime, and some of my fashion choices are criminal. But I have been so passionate about Drag Story Hour because when I was a little boy, girl, gal, girl, boy, fella, there weren't examples of people living their most authentic selves out loud and proud. And people will say, well, what is the message behind Story Hour? What are you trying to do there when you read the books to the kids? And we say, if you happen to see someone different in the world, treat them with kindness. So there's some song, there's a story, and of course a dance party, and just positive messaging about being kind to one another, no matter how you identify.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of pushback from some groups about Drag Story Hour, and it seems like that there's just this rhetoric going on. As you mentioned, drag's not a crime, but there seems to be a lot of people that are pushing this cultural issue. What's your reaction to some of that that's going on?
Well, drag is an art form, and I have been lucky enough to not only work with the Drag Story Hour at a local theater here in Rochester, New York, but also I'm teaching a course at SUNY Brockport regarding drag, because as an art form, they're like music or theater. There's something for every age. And so while people look at drag, they think of one thing, you know, nightclub performances. Whereas in the UK, panto is a very highly regarded type of drag that happens every year at Christmas, and it's for families. So I think the idea is that there's a mindset that drag is one specific type of performance, and there's something for everybody. And I think if you think of like Robin Williams, for instance, he would have his nightclub acts, but then he would also have his Aladdin performances or the different things that he would do that would be appropriate for kids and families. So that's, I think, the way that people really should look at it, is that as an art form, there's something for every age.
And given all this rhetoric that's been going on, do you ever feel, I mean, you're out there, you've been doing this, as you said, for a while, and it seems that there's just been some changes in attitudes. And in fact, in Woodstock, New York, in Ulster County this past Sunday, there was a bomb threat at the Woodstock Public Library in response to a drag story hour held the previous day. Do you ever feel unsafe doing what you do?
I think that it's good to keep your wits about you in this day and age, no matter what. But think about the message there. You are calling it, this person decided to call in a bomb threat where children are gathering with their families because a person is dressed in a fabulous costume to read a story to book, a story to children about kindness and treating people with love and respect and being good to yourself. Which one is the problem?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where is the real problem here? Where is the threat to children? The bomb threat. That negativity, no need for that. I mean, there was a time when we can just look maybe possibly and allow people to be themselves. And if it's not for you, then don't attend.
Mm. Let's talk about some of the other events going on. Drag Me to the Catskills weekend on Saturday afternoon. It's the pool party at Calicoon Hills Resort with some of your sisters. Can you tell us who's going to be there?
Darian Lake, Acid Betty, Thorgy Thor. Now, these are all RuPaul's Drag Race superstars. And it's going to be a hoot. They'll have some spot performances. I believe they'll be playing some, you know, some pool games and different things. And just really making it just a fun event to a fun, colorful, fabulous event. And I think that will be just a hoot. I decided not to bring out my two-piece. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to have my bikini, so I won't be attending that one.
It's early in the season, so
that's right. I need to get some more cardio in first.
You're resting up because 5:30 that night. It's a big day Saturday. The Catskill Pride Awards ceremony and reception, which you will be hosting along with Aggie Doon.
Yes. Oh, Aggie Doon and I have been performing together for years, over 20 years. And Aggie is an absolute incredible drag performer. And she and I have hosted many events like this over the years. And it's so wonderful to celebrate the community and talk about the achievements that are happening in the community and really recognize people doing their best to make it a place where everyone feels seen and recognized. I love things like this, so we're really looking forward to that.
Well, and this is also the inaugural event here in the Catskills, so it's really bringing people together to embrace self-expression and love and having it this first time out. There's got to be something special about that, too.
Well, and also, let's not hesitate to talk about our allies. You know, I've worked with the ACLU quite frequently in New York City, and they mentioned that in this world that we live so much through social media. But allies are there, and people are very supportive, and that's what we need. You know, if we can create a conversation where there's acceptance and love out in the community at a show like this or a brunch or an awards banquet, and then maybe later in the year at Thanksgiving, someone might be kinder to a niece or a nephew saying, you know what, I was just at an event like this, and I saw people really being you know, very positive and upbeat. And I think that you're in a safe place. You're going to be okay.
Saturday, as I said, a big night after the awards reception, you've got the Comedy Queens of the Catskills comedy show at 9. You guys is everybody that is participating in the weekend going to be there? Six queens?
The whole cast. So we've got Mrs. Kasha Davis, myself, Acid Betty, Ambrosia Salad, who is one of the kindest queens, but just a hoot. And have you ever had ambrosia salad?
I you know? the food, yes.
The food, exactly. I like how you said, you know, pause. Well, no, she's very colorful and fun. And then, of course, Darian Lake, Thorgy Thor, and Aggie Doon. And we love to do some stand-up. And then there's also some lip-sync, some comedy songs. I mean, if you've ever seen Thorgy Thor perform, she truly is like a live Muppet. You know, I mean, she's just, you're thinking to yourself, what is going on? And a classically trained musician and just so, so incredible. I'm not sure she'll be doing any of that at this particular weekend, but really a talent and just so energetic and fun to watch.
Well, you know, you mentioned a classically trained musician has played solo violin and cello with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, a very accomplished professional musician.
Yes.
Amazing.
Absolutely. It's amazing. And I love to see the art forms blending together like that and giving the opportunity for the people who come out to watch and to listen to the music to say, oh my gosh, you know, look at this, a drag artist who's also a musician. And it's really fun.
And then after the comedy show and after a very good night's sleep, it's Sunday's Drag Me to Brunch with all six queens at 11 at the Forestburg Playhouse.
Yes. And I mean, who doesn't love a brunch? You know what I'm saying? Brunch is a celebration of middle-aged women and their mothers. And I say that with such some comedy, but some truth, because when I tell you all the different people that come to the brunches, oftentimes the people bring their moms. And they'll say, this has been the best birthday of my life, they'll say. Or I haven't had this much fun in a long time. And that really warms my heart because, again, you look around the room and you see every walk of life, political view, age, gender, race, color, whatever the case may be, and we're all simply gathering together to have a good time.
Yeah, and so that's that ends the weekend. Drag Me to the Catskills. It's the 14th through the 16th throughout the Catskills. There's more information about all those events coming up this weekend at dragmetothecatskills.com. You're probably celebrating Pride all month. Where do you go after this event? Are there other things coming up for you?
Well, this last weekend, I was in Chicago, and then I went to Ottawa, Illinois, and then I went to Birmingham, Alabama, and then the news this morning, and now I'm with you. So, I mean, it's been a whirlwind. But that's Pride Month, and then Rochester celebrates Pride in July, so we extend it, you know.
You keep going. And
we just keep going.
And there's more information for Mr. Scottsdale Davis. Where can folks get more information about you?
Well, you can find me all over the social media platforms as Mrs. Kasha Davis, and you can follow us and get more information about this particular event at dragmetothestage.com.
All right, and we'll look forward to seeing you this weekend, Mrs. Kasha Davis. Say hi to Mr. Davis, Max, and your two adult stepdaughters and son-in-law.
Oh, my gosh, how kind of you. Thank you so much. He's sitting right here looking at me, probably taking notes, judging my answers, you know, that, as a good husband would.
Thank you, Mrs. Kasha Davis, appearing this weekend at Drag Me to the Catskills here in the Catskills. Thank you. All right, dragmetothecatskills.com is where you can get more information. And that's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. A reminder that we are participating in StoryCorps, their One Small Step program, where we're bringing individuals together to have a conversation, not to debate politics or anything like that, but people from different political perspectives to come together, have a conversation, record those, and then put them into StoryCorps. Some of these conversations, with the permission of participants, could go to the Library of Congress. So there's more information about this great program at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
This is Kusar Grace KG, right here in the place to be, WJFF Radio Catskills Music Emporium, Tuesday night, 7 to 9. 2 hours of great music, jazz, funk, blues. I got mellow grooves to help you unwind, exciting rhythms to help you cut loose. Join me Tuesday night for the Music Emporium, 7 to 9, right here on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, host of On Point. Each hour of On Point is a journey to help make complicated issues understandable. Every issue brings more questions, like how did we get here? Why is this happening? And what does it mean? And how do we fix it? So let's figure this out and make sense of the world together. Join me weekday mornings at 11 here on Radio Catskill.
And On Point is coming up next. Today's forecast, a brief shower this afternoon possible, high 66. Tonight, clear, low 53. Tomorrow, sunny and pleasant, high 71. And for Thursday, warming up, sunny and a high of 82.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. Another way to help us bring you the news is donate a vehicle you don't need. Car, truck, motorcycle, you can donate to this station and it could mean hundreds of dollars of support. Thanks.
We accept any vehicle, running or not.
Donate your car, boat, or motorcycle at WJFFradio.org.
Celebrate Pride Weekend in the Sullivan Catskills, June 14th to 16th. Drag Me to the Catskills, a drag show event and celebration of LGBTQ plus pride and self-expression, with drag queen performances, dance parties, brunch, and more. Drag Me to the Catskills, June 14th to 16th. More information at dragmetothecatskills.com. It's going to be a fabulous weekend in the Catskills. Paid for by Sullivan Catskills Visitors Association.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR. Live streaming at WJFFradio.org. Ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill.